Lincoln's award-winning station of the year in East Midlands, Siren 107.3 FM. It's the Midweek Drive. And that was the Love Unlimited Orchestra. In the studio, we have Ross Ironfield, we have Ed Wellman, and we have Gabriella Peralta. And online, we have, about to make his debut on the whole production, a gentleman whose website is phenomenal. It's themotivationspeaker.com. He's a number one best-selling author. He's a Guinness record breaker. He's a media personality. He's been on Oprah, so he's been trained by Oprah, by the best, for the Midweek Drive. He is David Thomas. How are you, David?
I'm very well. Good evening.
Excellent. Delighted to speak with you, good self. We won't ask you to go through 3.142 recurring, because you wouldn't actually have the recurring. You'd just actually continue reciting Pi until pretty much, I suppose, Christmas actually launched in the whole system, basically. But you have had a fascinating journey, as earmarked, obviously, on your website and so on, moving from the Fire Brigade right the way through motivational speaking, interspersed with Guinness record breaking, and as we said, obviously, being on Oprah and a whole stack of other things. Does it all begin as a child, or is it just a case of, no, you've visualized it, you've manifested it, you've sorted the thing through, you have become the great person we've come to know and appreciate?
There's no hocus pocus whatsoever. As a kid, I didn't do particularly well, and I joined the fire service because I had almost no qualifications, and while I was a fireman, I bought a book on memory, and 8 months after buying the book, I went to the World Memory Championships and came fourth. And it's been, that was nearly 20 years ago, and it's been a steady rise and moving into other areas ever since.
There's a wonderful line that I heard in one of the clips on your, on the motivationspeaker.com, which talked about your nickname in the fire service. And I'd like you to share that little line, because I thought it was quite amusing from a kind of biological perspective. Go for it.
Hey, well, everybody has a nickname in the fire service. And when I was a fireman, my nickname was Thrombo. And that was short for thrombosis, yeah, as in a slow-moving clot. Which is one of those things that's hilarious till it's about you.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's the sort of thing, you know, we had Rupert Baker, who was in the series London's Burning on the show in the summer. He was a regular sort of participant in the whole thing. You know, they had all sick note there, various other bits, but thrombo, really, you know, a bit harsh. Still, you know, it all adds to the whole system from that point of view. Ross, you strike me as somebody who never really needs motivation, being in the job of marketing for Lincoln Performing Arts Centre and moving on. But you know, what questions do you have for David Thomas, Guinness record breaker, number one best-selling author and motivational speaker?
Do you have any tips for kind of remembering stuff? Because I always have sort of problems even remembering sort of simple things. Like I've just learned my printer code after kind of sort of 8 months.
And the printer code is what, 4 digits?
I couldn't even tell you now, because it's just by pressing right buttons on
the
keypad.
Actually, no, 6 digits. It's a bit tougher than that, actually. In fact, 2 lots of 6 digits, actually. So that's a fair point. I think you need your help, David.
I think so. Well, memory's dead simple. If I give you the word breakfast, what are you thinking about?
Weetabix and other brands.
So you're not thinking of the black word breakfast on a white background?
No.
But I am.
Thinking of food.
That's how I thought of it, David. I certainly did. I saw the word when you said it.
The words of Ed Wellman there. He actually saw the word as opposed to thinking of the image.
Oh.
Gabriella,
I actually wasn't thinking.
Gabriella just wasn't thinking.
I was just like, oh, breakfast, that's nice. That sounds good.
Well, there we have it. It's like a neurophysiologist.
Yes, everyone's different, I see.
Precisely, yes. So carry on, David. What's the next step? We've thought about breakfast. What's the next level?
The bottom line is that most people think in images. They don't think in words. Mm. That's why kids' books at 5 years old are 80% images. And kids love going to school at 5 years old. You get a kid at 16, 17, you look at their study guides, it's missing, and they're 80% words, and they hate going to school because it's hard. And they're not being taught in the way that we naturally learn, which is images. And things that are weird and ridiculous and stupid and funny. That's why we remember unusual names. So the more difficult a name is to say, the more likely we are to remember it. We remember images, names, for example, that we can link to something. If I said my name was George Bush, be more likely to remember my name. So memory training as a concept is dead simple. All you do is to take the information that you need to remember and turn it into crazy images. And that's how I did Pi to 22,500 digits, memorized 100 packs of cards, 160 numbers in 5 minutes.
Wow.
it's good quality stuff. And I've been fortunate enough to meet several memory folk, and to a certain extent blessed with a reasonable memory and recall myself, because it's that whole filing system that we actually have and being able to access that and so on. I must remember, of course, to mention to one of our new listeners from India, Devalina Das, who we've just heard is actually listening to us from Delhi in India, which is nice, because I always feel that, you know, we need more links with Delhi. You know, Lincoln and Delhi, India, go together like all sorts of marvellous setups there. It's like Lincoln and Buxton and Los Angeles and other sorts of areas. But in terms of that whole line, David, you know, is everybody different? Do people have a different sort of way of working through that? And I mean, you've got lots of wonderful testimonials from obviously companies that you've assisted, you've worked through, as you say yourself, in maybe getting close to Christmas, but it hasn't slowed down the work of DMT International. This week you've clocked up over 1,000 miles, and presumably is that just in the British Isles?
Yeah. Yes, I've done, well, actually, in the last 7 days, I've done 12, just sort of 1,400 miles in the last 7 days. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, I travel all over the world, and but the audiences I have are very varied. So, you know, there are a lot, obviously, commercial businesses I go into, but I'll spend about 30% of my time in schools. I've been into charities, public and private sector. I've spent time in the fire service, working there. So it doesn't matter who I'm teaching. Everybody thinks in the same way. Everybody learns in the same way. Because even though we all think we're unique, we all actually want and think in very similar kind of ways. When you ask people what makes them happy, it's always the same three or four things, broadly speaking. And that's worldwide. You always think that culturally things are going to be different. I've spoken in Iran and asked them how to teach their kids, and it's exactly the same as it is in Huddersfield. You think it would be different, but it isn't. So actually, you know, the techniques work. Cross-cultural ground, which I think is probably one of the most interesting things about travelling around and experiencing different cultures and different people.
Gabriella, questions from yourself.
I just really want to know about your Guinness record-breaking challenge. How did it go? What did you do to prepare? Just tell me a bit about it, because I find that quite interesting, how you decided to do it.
Well, I decided in 1998... to do a Guinness record. I was guaranteed to come second in the World Championships in 1998, but guaranteed not to win. And by that time, I'd had a change in attitude, because second place was first place loser. So I didn't want to come second. Who would want to come second? I'm a winner. I want to be number one. So I decided to do a Guinness record, and there were only three Guinness records at the time, and reciting power was the only one that I felt was within my grasp. And it took me 6 hours a day for 6 months to learn 22,500 digits of pi.
And that, of course, is before Life of Pi actually emerged, and you actually could write them all down from that perspective. I love the little clip, again, on video of you reciting the full thing to an audience who I think are beginning to get a little bit stressed in terms of how far you're going to go with respect to this. But it was good. It was excellent. It worked through that. Do you find, in terms of, obviously, I mean, I've noticed speed reading is coming up here. Is that a similar thing? I mean, speaking as an academic who's just started the swathe of delightful essays that our undergraduates provide for us academics to kind of keep us occupied when other people will be out having mince pies or such like. In terms of that, is that something else which, you know, again, it's a skill that you can improve, you can develop, practice makes perfect and so on?
Absolutely. The problem is we're taught the wrong ways, kids, how to read. So by the time, you know, people get in front of me, those beliefs and habits are very firmly formed. But it doesn't take a lot of effort, probably 5 minutes practice a day, doing speed reading. You can be reading at 1,000 words a minute inside a month. And it's a trained technique. And I, again, you know, having spoken to 250,000 people over the last 18 years, I can say that nobody does not improve when they learn how to do it properly.
Up to 80% of what is learned is forgotten within 24 hours. Shocking, really. I mean, we work on these shows, we craft them together, and the fact that we might have a little... Fortunately, we have podcasts so you can actually listen again via the Podbean side of things. But, Ed, you have come from education. I've been consistently sort of hurling books in your direction to actually say, read these whole thing through. What are your thoughts on this whole process?
I think that concentration is quite difficult, generally, in the society in which we live now, and it's quite hard to keep your perspective on where you want to go. And David, I'm interested that you believe that we all hold keys to our own success and happiness. So we've all got those tools, but quite a lot of the time we're just not using them very well, are we?
No, but that's a personal decision. When you get up in the morning, mm-hmm. almost every decision you made is not... everything that happens is a decision you make. Mm. Even if an event happens that you have no control over. For example, my mother was a lifelong alcoholic. Now, I couldn't stop her drinking when she was a kid. When I was a kid. Mm. But my response to that event ultimately determines the outcome. Mm. And we absolutely have control over a huge amount of what we do. If you're in a job and you don't like it, leave, get a different job. Yet people will always be, generally speaking, a BSE. They blame someone or something else. They go, well, I can't learn because
I had a bad teacher,
I had a bad school. I can't be successful because I wasn't born in the right part of the country. My parents, I don't have enough money. I could never do this and I could never do that. Just simple self-limiting beliefs. But, you know, hopefully my story, which is in itself coming from a very troubled background of overcoming incredible adversity, without a great education and without a silver spoon, shows that actually anything is possible. But so, the problem, the actual limiting factor, there is only one limiting factor. That is that people don't want it enough.
Sure. Some of the changes then are quite big, aren't they, that we might need to make in our lives. What are some of the smaller changes that we can kind of get cracking on? What advice do you have for people who know that they need to really get on top of stuff and make progress in life? How can you start to do that? Because kind of leaving your job is something perhaps you have to work towards.
You know what? Small changes make, you know, small changes don't produce enough, because you need to have an emotional paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. That means that you need to have a big change that makes you feel completely different.
Right.
And I'm telling you, your listeners, probably 20% of them are in a relationship they should have left at least 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
2014, dump your partner. If they're not the one for you, if you don't want to be with them in 40 years, dump them now, because life is way too short.
Well, that's good news for divorce lawyers in the Lincolnshire region and possibly beyond, but never mind, we'll carry out. Ross, thoughts from yourself?
I kind of can relate to some of the stuff you've been saying, David, because I've kind of found myself in similar situations where I've kind of been always held back by situations and things like that. You always kind of justify reasons for not moving on and going for new jobs and things like that. And I think, I think what you were saying is right, just, you know, having that kind of breaking those kind of beliefs and just going for it is definitely very good advice. So,
got to ask
the problem is, it's not small changes you need to make. It's big ones. 2 years ago, I lost 5 stone in 5 months. I was 20 stone, 40% body fat. That ain't going to work. I'm going to die 10 years too young. A year ago, I was in a relationship that I'd been in for 8.5 years. My ex thought it would last 8.5 hours. You know, you just got to make, it's the big stuff you've got to look at, not the little ones. It's the big stuff. And if you're in the wrong job, I understand you can't just leave your job, but you can apply for something else. You can go and do that degree. There are no barriers to entry now for travel and education. So just make a big change. And that's what you want in life. Because once you make a big change, then you make the bigger changes everywhere else. And the small ones will get sucked into the updraft. And then you've got to have that paradigm shift. What's causing you the most pain? Sort it out.
David Thomas has one of the most powerful and intriguing minds in the country, according to the Daily Mail, which I'd go along with. The book, of course, Tell Me Why, Mummy, available and presumably available for download, etc. And, of course, Improving Your Memory, 150,000 copies already sold, published in 16 countries, including the United States, the UK, Indonesia, Brazil and Holland. Got to ask the question, David, what was Oprah like?
Honestly, it was great, because normally when you go on Oprah, what happens is you get taken to the stage from the green room. You don't meet people. I've been on television quite a bit, so you don't meet the presenters. Yeah. But I was getting tested, so I turned up in the morning, and it was empty. So the whole show was empty, and it was me on my own. And I'm stood there in this little mezzanine area, and Oprah comes out the door, and she looks at me and she goes, "Who are you?"
As she would if you're Oprah, presumably.
Yeah, because I'm stood there on my own. And she didn't say,
"Do you know who I am?" Did she?
Well, it was a bit like, you know, she looked at me, she said, "Who are you?" And I said, "My name's David." And I said, "Who are you?"
Nice.
she said, "I'm Oprah." And I said, "I know you are. That's a joke." And, and we had a fantastic 10 minutes chatting, and normally you don't get to meet these people. And I thought, she's amazing, because in my experience of having worked with billionaires, captains of industry, Olympic gold medal winning athletes, and met people at that level, you don't get that good by treating people badly.
I love the way you say, born in the UK, Halifax, Yorkshire, brackets, a small northern English town. Genius. You know, it's not too far away, of course, from Preston in many ways, but Hull, Helen, Halifax,
Huddersfield. In fact, we have a lot of correspondence.
I had a feeling you'd actually sort of raise the Huddersfield issue.
Huddersfield is the best town in the UK.
We've just actually heard that Devalina is actually not in Delhi at present; she's in a different part of India. But never mind, it's okay. Sometimes the global audience is very difficult to maintain. But there we are. I'm giving negative thoughts out again. Gabriella, any other questions you want to put to David Thomas about maybe how he can actually motivate you to continue with your excellent work on your dissertation and more?
Yes, David. What are your tips to keep someone maybe a bit more concentrated if they're writing maybe, let's just say, a literature review, which is taking a particularly long time to do? So what would you say for me to keep concentrated and carry on doing my work?
It's dead simple. Start with the end in mind. Why are you doing it? The thing that gets me out. The thing that gets me out of bed at 4:45 to go to the gym in the morning is knowing that I don't want to be 20 stone again. I don't want to get out of bed at 4:45. I go to the gym. It's hard work. I then go and do a full day's work. I travel around the country, but I do it because I have that specific goal. So whatever it is you're doing, if you want to, you know, if you're doing a degree or you're doing some academic. You know, qualification, why? It's got to be a big enough why. Because then when you sit there and you go, why am I doing this? And that's what you do, and that changes your state. So you sit there, shut your eyes, and you go, you imagine receiving the role of the Chancellor of the University, and then you sit there and you go, got to do the dissertation.
Thank you,
David.
10 points.
Yes.
Or as Mike Dooley, one of our other great colleagues and contributors from Florida, would say, focus on the end of a routine and work backwards from there. David, it's been fascinating just getting a sort of insight into ways forward. As we mentioned, the go-to website, themotivationspeaker.com. That's themotivationspeaker.com, all one words, and the usual three W's before that. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut on the show this evening?
It's been brilliant. Thank you. And I appreciate all the time that you've allowed me to speak and... And the questions as well. It's been brilliant. Thank you very much.
I think a round of applause for David Thomas. And I've got to sort of say, presumably no relation whatsoever to the former Queen's Park Rangers and Burnley winger, who is called Dave Thomas.
Yeah, that's my sister.
Ah, just wanted to clarify that. So I take it then we can look forward in 2014 to hopefully welcoming you back to the show again?
I'd love to. Thank you very much indeed. I'd love to return, yeah.
It's all very well talking about vampires, but the Hooded Claw was a character in the Adventures of Penelope Pitstop, and I would have thought surely it was the Anthill Mob who protected them from the Hooded Claw. It's a minor point, but, you know, I have to sort of ensure these things are sorted through. Isn't that right, Michelle Monroe?
Absolutely.
Critical. Anyway, nice to know that Penny Evans said that was her fave Christmas song ever. What, even better than yours, Penny, which we'll be listening to in about 15 or so minutes? I think she's going to cry in a good way. Exactly. Michelle, welcome back for the final time in 2013.
I know, it's frightening. Where's it all gone, Alex?
Oh, please, I don't. It's time, it's just an illusion. Around about 364 days or so, we were just prepping for the 25-hour marathon that we were doing, in which Ed and myself helped save the world together with Dean Hagland and Phil Leonis and Ilana Rain and the rest of the folk, etc. Little did we know then that the reason we saved the world was so we could welcome Gabriella Peralta, the girl from Gibraltar, and Ross Ironfield to the studio, you know, wow, in 2013. And hopefully long into 2014 as well, after a fashion, which is great. It's marvellous. Anyway, shall we not mess around anymore?
We won't, because I tell you, Alex, my father only ever recorded 3 Christmas songs, 2 of which I've already played to you over the last couple of weeks. And with the big day just 1 week away, I thought I should complete this hat-trick of seasonal songs. Whilst recording his last EMI album, If I Never Sing Another Song, in 1979, my father recorded 2 Christmas songs. This week's choice was a hit for Johnny Mathis in 1976 and is based on the Italian melody Soledo by Ciro D'Amico, with English lyrics later added by Fred Jay. Produced by John Burgess and arranged by Martin Ford and John Bell, here is Dad's version of When a Child is Born.
flickers in the sky. A tiny star, an illusion now. It must come true, sometime soon, somehow. All across the land, dawns a brand new morn. This comes to pass when a child is born. This comes to pass when a child is born.
Buxton Derbyshire correspondent Penny Evans. I had no idea Matt Munro sang this. I love it.
Aww.
Ed, that was in the key of
C.
C. There we are. Key of C, Ross, just in case you wish to impress your colleagues and friends. Ross, any questions you want to put to Michelle Munro about life, the universe, her forthcoming cruises in 2014?
What year did you say that song was from?
It's from an Italian melody called Toledo.
Just getting Italian online there, just to sort of confirm details and all the rest of the bits and pieces. Carry on.
It's funny because on Ken Bruce's show this week, Johnny Mathis was on giving his favourite songs, and he not only chose one of Daddy's, but was very, very kind about him, knowing him and what inspiration Dad gave to him and his music.
Is that another radio station then that you mentioned there, Michelle? That sort of.
I think it's BBC Radio 2, but yeah. I'm not actually saying.
Exactly. It's all right. We have a message that's coming via text. Greetings from Birmingham. Who could this be? We'd like to wish everyone a Merry Christmas.
Listen, a week to go, Alex. I'm so excited.
Oh, Ben's so excited. Like the Pointer Sisters, never mind. Gabriella, thoughts and questions for yourself? Did you enjoy the tune?
Yeah, I enjoyed the song. Yeah, it was good. Very Christmassy. Got me in the Christmas spirit. I haven't heard a Christmas song since probably last week. So, Michelle, you're providing me with all the Christmas joy over the past couple of weeks. I literally haven't heard a song.
You've got to get in the mood now.
Yes, I'm going home on Friday, so hopefully I'll get in the Christmas mood.
Fabulous. Well, I do wish you a wonderful week, and, well, in fact, a happy, healthy 2014 to everybody.
Oh, thank you. You too, Michelle.
Same to you.
And as we said, interesting things for the 6 o'clock slot on Wednesdays, because to keep the musical thing going, we have fortnightly Matt Munro specials, interspersed with some Cameron Tilbury Nashville tunes as well. It's very exciting, Michelle. It's like, oh,
it
great
is, but
world.
I shall be on live occasionally.
Of course you will, exactly.
That's, of course, if I have any data left. My Entourage programme crashed. Now, listen to this.
No.
I had to get the data recovery people to pick it up, and they spent a week deciding what diagnostics it needed, and they then said, would you believe that they couldn't retrieve it by 98%? And the cost, Alex, only £8,800.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Wow.
And they say computers aren't taking over the world, eh?
Well, yeah. I want to know what justifies that. I could buy about 6 Apple things for that.
Oh, good, indeed.
Absolutely crazy.
And when you said entourage, I had a feeling it was basically all the people who carry your bags, the people who sort of, carry on, hair and makeup, all of that.
It would have been cheaper to employ them.
Yeah, exactly.
And they could have carried my emails.
Ed Wellman, what are the last two questions we need to throw towards Michelle Munro?
Never.
Exactly.
I'm afraid the questions are going to be bold.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Never. Oh, God.
With more success than England had with the Australian cricket team anyway, but sorry.
So, Michelle, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show today?
It was wonderful.
I thank you. And can we look forward to connecting with you? Well, it will be in at least 2 weeks from now, possibly.
Well, it won't, actually. Yeah. I mean, I will have my choice ready and aim to go. Alex is looking after it for me. Mm-hmm. But I go away on the 5th of January to see again, to promote my dad and his music, and, of course, Siren. So, but I will be popping in live periodically.
Exactly, and that's the exciting thing, because we'll be adjusting all manner of marvellous routines. Partridge Family okay with your good self, Michelle?
Oh, I love it. It's a bit of David Cassidy.
To you and all your family, your neighbours and your friends, may all your days be happy with the joy that never ends. May peace and love surround you at Christmas time and all the whole year.